This is Paul Rodell again. It's the IBS Oral History Project. Today is Saturday, June 22nd, and I'm in Ithaca, New York, talking to Nancy Ridenour, who's just used her name to speak in there, so I am now sure of the pronunciation. I wasn't sure before. And IBS Laos years 1965 through 66, and we'll get into to work and relationships with people and the like. But first, starting off as I have in some other chats with other people, the question that we didn't have on our form was your own personal background in terms of where and when you were born and your parents and, you know, what got you to be pointed in the direction that joining an organization, IVS or something similar, was something that you wanted to do. So that would be a good play. That's kind of a sweeping thing.
Yeah.
But then it would, in a sense, by listening back, we'll hear what people think are important for their own lives, because people have emphasize different things.
Yeah, I was born in Schenectady, and
okay.
My father was a florist, and my mother had been a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
She had seven children, so she obviously took a long time off and went back to substitute teach when I was a teenager. I did a lot of work with 4-H mm-hmm. when I was a kid. I think I was in 4-H for about 10 years. You know what 4-H is?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So I worked on a farm when I was in Schenectady. We lived in a rural part of Schenectady where I could walk down the road and work on a farm.
Wasn't your own family farm?
Was not my own family farm.
Yeah,
so with the 4-Hers, a group of us worked at this farm, and they let us use their cattle to
mm-hmm.
show at the county
mm-hmm.
fairs
mm-hmm.
and things like that. So, you know, you showed vegetables and cattle and, you know, really did the farmy type thing, which wasn't really popular in the school I went to. A lot of the other people in the neighborhood and in the town of Niskayuna is very elite.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I lived, and most of the people were GE. In fact, I got teased mercilessly for doing 4-H stuff and, you know, milking cows.
GE the company.
Yeah, GE
yeah.
the company, and winning milking contests. I mean, I was just not part of
the
country club scene. Well, we didn't have as much money as the rest of them did, and it was more of an agrarian type of a background,
mm-hmm.
educated agrarian rather than the GE pseudo
mm-hmm.
elite, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So while I was doing 4-H work, we used to have guest speakers come through,
yeah.
you know, at different 4-H events. And I can remember when I was 13, there's a speaker talking about experiences in the Philippines, and I probably wasn't Peace Corps at that time. It might have been some church world service or what, you know.
Yeah, if it was before 60, it certainly wouldn't have been.
I have no idea what
and
the group
it had
was.
To have been because of your own
yeah.
service. Yeah.
So, you know, I remember them talking about, you know, the work in the Philippines,
mm-hmm.
and I could still remember that they were talking about they used to eat fertilized eggs. I mean, I remember the most bizarre trivia. So
that always makes an impression
yeah.
on people.
Sorry.
I mean, I tell my students some of the most wacko things, and I have to be real careful to tell them not to put that on their tests.
Yeah.
Because
well,
that sticks.
Well, they said that, you know, the eggs would be fertilized and incubated, and then they, just before they hatched, they'd be broken open and
mm-hmm.
eaten. Well, of course, as a 13-year-old, I thought that was the grossest but most interesting thing going. And between that and I was brought up in a very religious family where there was mission, the whole idea of being a missionary and helping others was sort of infused into my spirit. So the two things sounded like a neat combination. So I, as of 13, I always wanted to do something like that, go overseas and help people. You know,
yeah.
I was brought up to help people.
What church was it that you
Reformed,
family?
Okay. Second Reformed. It was the German Reformed.
Okay.
And so with that kind of a background, I, you know, went off to high school and still did 4-H work and went off to college. And wanted to, then it turned into I wanted to do Peace Corps work, because mm-hmm. that was the only organization I knew
right.
at the time. And then I met George, who was a grad mm-hmm. student here, and he had been in IVS Laos.
Here, you mean at Cornell?
Cornell. Okay. Yeah, that's, well, I skipped a few years, I went to Cornell.
Yeah, okay, well, then that's all right.
Yeah,
all
right. So...
But in the Aggie school?
Yeah, I was a biology major in the Ag school.
Okay.
And George was a rural Soch grad student in the Ag
mm-hmm,
school, so
mm-hmm.
I met him there. He had been in Laos for 2 years doing IVS work.
Yeah, okay.
And his stories, you know, just sound very exciting, and it was more exciting in Laos than the Peace Corps, because it had that cutting edge, not cutting edge, but well, you're in a zone where it was scarier, you know.
Yeah.
Laos and Vietnam, the more insecure areas, and of course, the whole idea drove my mother nuts, but to me it sounded
yes,
like
I bet.
A fun idea, and you know, we were developing relationships, so it made sense to
mm-hmm.
go to the country where George was going to go if I were accepted in
yeah.
IVS, because he was planning to go
back. He was
going to
go back. Oh,
he was
going
back with AID.
Oh, that's right. You said he had joined AID after.
Yeah, so he was going to go back with AID,
mm-hmm.
and so I wanted to do something and thought, well, it seemed reasonable for me to go with IVS. So I got accepted.
Because, yeah, Peace Corps wouldn't have been there. Yeah.
No, I could have gone to Peace Corps.
Lots of places.
Well, I could have gone to Thailand, but if you want to pursue a relationship, that's a long ways away.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought we'd try that. And I was sent over to Phong Dieng to
mm-hmm.
work as a home economist. Now, this is a stretch of the imagination right here. I never had any background in home economics. Well, except for 4-H work. I sewed. I
yeah,
cooked.
A few of that.
I know how to wash my face, and that's about all the requirements were.
That's what any little girl and many little boys would have done,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but they didn't. They gave no training whatsoever. They gave
mm-hmm.
no expectations of what to do. They just said, you're a home economist. By training, I was a biologist.
Yeah.
But
I love what you wrote on this. I don't know if you remember.
No.
Let's see, where is it? Ah, it was question number one. I was assigned as a home economist in Phong Dieng because I was a woman.
That's precisely.
Yeah. And that's so pithy in
yes.
its statement, and yet so clear.
That's what, so I was a woman, I should have known all that stuff. And so we went through 3 weeks of training in Berlitz. In Washington.
Oh, you did get some.
Just in language.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were down in Washington for 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
right after I graduated from Cornell. And,
you
know,
the young college graduate clutching degree
yeah.
as a 21-year-old going right off. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, graduating in May and was leaving in
mm-hmm.
July, and, you know, just sort of it's very exciting to me, and I'm sure now I can see as a parent how traumatic it was, but at that time, hey, I'm out of here. I just wanted to get as far away from home as possible. So.
Me too, actually. Anyway.
I had 3 weeks of language training, could
mm-hmm.
speak fairly well after 3 weeks. It was a 7-hour-a-day intensive course at Berlitz. And then flew over there, 7 guys and me.
Mm-hmm.
And we flew through Tokyo and Hong Kong and stayed overnight in Vietnam
oh, uh-huh.
at the IVS building, and then flew up to Laos.
Who was with you, this group of folks?
Wade Chubbuck was one, I remember. Dave Percival.
Okay.
I can picture them all, but I can't come up with
yeah,
that
with
many
all
names.
No, I'm curious because we've gotten some
yeah.
responses back from different people. So.
And one of the he was going to go back as an assistant chief of party, I think, Ken, and I hung out with him a lot, and he was
mm-hmm.
a little older, and I can't remember his last name at all. So got to Vientiane, and I was sent right up to Phong Dieng, again, with no direction or expectations of what I should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was supposedly going to be introduced to the area by the area coordinator, the USAID area coordinator.
Oh,
all
okay.
the IVS work was directed by the USAID people.
Mm-hmm.
So the coordinator, they probably had another job It's like being somebody in charge of a state, the regional coordinator, whatever they're called.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in charge of all the development activities in that area. And all the IVSers had to report to him. In fact, we were really subsumed under AID, even though it was called an independent organization. It was really funded by AID, so we were subsumed under AID and had to follow their directives. Well, my coordinator wasn't even there half the time. And again, so there I am saying, what in hell am I supposed to do?
This is the IV, the AID coordinator.
The AID coordinator. IVS hadn't given me any directions. The AID people didn't really give me directions, so you just sort of go out and try to start programs with the local women, you
mm-hmm.
know, sewing or cooking or cleanliness or whatever. And so I worked there for 9 months, and there were a couple other IVSers at the time. Ken Ullum was doing agriculture.
Uh-huh.
Jim Chamberlain was doing something else. I never did figure out what he was doing. but he did. He ended up marrying a Lao girl.
Uh-huh.
I remember that whole affair. That was very exciting. So
well, why exciting?
Well, it wasn't typical that Americans married Lao girls. I mean, half his age.
Oh,
about half his
okay.
age. A lot younger.
Oh,
she was a teen. She was a teenager, and he was in his 20s.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I just remember the whole drama of, you know, should he get involved? Shouldn't he get involved? And
okay.
I think the whole thing ended up in a divorce and a lot of messy stuff.
Too bad.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But it, he was just trying to do something different, I think.
Hmm.
So.
Or maybe just got caught up in the whole.
Yeah. Romance.
The whole thing, yeah, romance of the country, and didn't recognize limits.
Van Vieng was a beautiful, beautiful area with all these limestone escarpments
uh-huh.
that you see in, did you see Indochine?
Oh yeah.
And all these escarpments up in
Vietnam, off the coast, yeah.
That's what it's like in Van Vieng. It was the plains were surrounded by these escarpments and just
uh-huh.
very gorgeous. I always thought it'd be a beautiful place to have tourism. And I'm sure ecotourism will find its way in there. When
probably.
Somebody gets smart.
Probably. They
and
may already be there.
They could already be there because they had made a road to Vientiane, so it's drivable.
Mm-hmm.
I used to drive down it once in a while
mm-hmm.
in the early days when it was semi-safe. But nobody really introduced me well to the area. There's some other IVSers there. Joanne Bushler and her husband, ex-husband, were there, and I lived with them for a while. Larry Burkett was there. But in retrospect, I don't remember somebody really taking me around.
Mm-hmm.
I never had the feeling that, you know, the Lao should have been in charge. We came in with the idea that we were in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Bad, bad. You know, we were supposed to be working with them. I can still remember the Cong Le, who was the neutralist general,
mm-hmm.
at some, you know, party, looking over at me and asking in Lao to somebody, who's that? You know, I'd never been introduced to him
mm-hmm.
and made part of the scene. So,
right.
you know, I felt part of it vis-a-vis IVS, but I didn't feel part of it vis-a-vis the real community.
When you said that we thought we were in charge, I think
Americans.
That was your all Americans. So you're lumping IVS along with AID, along with anyone else.
Right, I think.
As a national
right.
mentality.
I think, you know, my thing is I told Ron, we're there thinking we're going to do honest development work.
Mm-hmm.
I went over fully thinking I was going to do honest development work. And even as George and I were there 5 years, we still thought we were doing honest development work. But I think we're just pawns of the government, of the military.
Which government?
Ours.
Okay.
And it was a cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
There might have been some, it was a pretty expensive cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were some honest desires to help the people, but I think if you stand back, you know, with a little older mentality,
mm-hmm.
I think we were there to keep things quiet while the military was doing their thing. Could be wrong, but it...
By meaning keeping it quiet, keeping...
The people happy.
The people happy.
I think there was, as I said, there was honest development work.
Mm-hmm.
There's an awful lot of military stuff that was going on in the background.
Mm-hmm.
There were people who were assigned as regional coordinators who weren't AID, they were CIA,
mm-hmm.
but they're still called regional coordinators. So the local people themselves, they used to ask us up in Sayaburi, which government am I working with? You know, you've got more than one government. So everything was always somewhat mixed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I got there, it would have been better if the Americans had made me feel like I was more responsible to the Lao.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't.
They may not have even been, the Lao may not even have been consulted about the possibility of having a home ec person of any competence, whatever, that they were coming. I know that was a big thing in Peace Corps when they started to go off and actually meet government officials to plan things.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Hey, rural development or community development means community development, working together.
As a community.
As a community, but I didn't find it that true in my reflection. Maybe for the boys it was different, but again, I was the girl, and...
Which made it all the worse.
My program wasn't that legitimate. The boys were helping the farmers. That's legitimate. Farmers make, you know, produce food. I was helping them make blouses. We're sharing recipes and a little bit about cleanliness. This was not considered as big a deal as what the boys were doing. So...
By who? By the boys themselves?
Probably by everybody.
Okay. Even the Lao?
I would think so.
Okay.
You know, it was a little entertainment, but I don't think it was taken real seriously. I made friends, and I had, you know, Lao assistants who were extension agents. But again, I wasn't really introduced as to my relationship with them.
Yeah.
And I think we did some nice things, and I developed some women's development programs, and we had little sessions, and probably even getting the women together was important to give them some esteem on their own outside of the home and to create more community. But I also remember that there was a factor of the military wives were being paid to come to some of my sessions because it was a lot of military in the area. The non-military wives weren't. So there was this big discrepancy. Why were the military wives paid to go to a, quote, seminar or a session or whatever, and the non-military wives weren't? So you've got a bigger schism there, and so there I was in the middle of this whole thing.
Did you know about this?
Yeah, but I was too young to make any decisions. I mean, it wasn't...
Okay, so it wasn't like you found out about it later.
Well, the decision to pay the military wives was done by the AID coordinator to try to get the wives to go.
Not even by the local Lao of paying their own women to go, so therefore to get more money in a different way.
I think it...
Goodness
again,
gracious. I just assumed corruption, you know, kind of nepotism.
Yeah. No,
you know, a general saying.
I think it was stupidity.
Yeah.
I think it was... We went through so many different coordinators at the time, AID coordinators.
Mm.
There was, while I was there for 9 months, I had three bosses. And only one of them really lived there. The others commuted back and forth to Vientiane. They had some of their own personal problems, but none of them gave us really solid direction.
By us, you mean...
IVSers.
Yeah.
Didn't give the IVSers, and they'd make these decisions like to pay the military wives to kiss up to the military. Because they knew better what was going on there than I did, I'm sure. They knew.
For their purposes, but not necessarily for development purposes.
Right. But I think they had a better handle. They were older. I think they had a better handle and with more experience. And they were working with the military. They were at a different level, and here we're trying to do our goody-two-shoes jobs, you know, with the people. I think if we had been connected to this whole thing and had a better perspective at the time, we would have been more effective, wiser.
That maybe. I don't know about effective.
I look back and put a lot of people, you know, I look back and think, gee, how stupid we were. But, and everybody I've talked to says about the same thing. Boy, were we stupid. We didn't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I worked there.
This is your first assignment.
In Vang Vien.
In Vang Vien, right.
There was some direction from a woman named Dorothy Haiyai, who was in charge of home economics, but she and I didn't get along at all.
H-E-I-E-I-E.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Dorothy and I didn't get along. She had some pet women who kissed up to her. And I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And they made it difficult for me. I mean, it didn't matter what I did. If I sat wrong at a bossy, they'd did you see she sat wrong? Well, nobody told me how to sit at a bossy. And so she wasn't terribly effective. So, you know, this went on for 9 months.
Well, she was IVS, right?
She was possibly, IVS in Vientiane directing the home activity. So obviously she,
okay.
She didn't give me a lot of direction.
Okay.
We might have had some meetings, and we'd have meetings periodically in Vientiane of how to work with the women and, you know, developing certain, oh, Boulder Wheat, that was a biggie. Teach the people how to, you know, I thought that was disgusting stuff. Now, what do we eat in this country for nutrition? Boulder Wheat.
No.
That's, you know, the in thing, Boulder and all.
Oh, well, you mean now?
Yeah.
Like at Moosewood.
Yeah,
yeah,
like
well.
At Moosewood, Boulder Wheat. And, you know, it's a...
Well, also, you know, AID and Catholic Relief were trying to get rid of tons of Boulder Wheat.
Yeah, so we're in the midst of teaching... I can remember teaching them how to use Boulder, new recipes for Boulder, new recipes of how to use that disgusting powdered milk.
Oh, yeah.
That tasted, you know, it wasn't instant. It was a block
container
like this of hard powdered milk. You had to break it apart with a sledgehammer. If you boiled it, you might have gotten something that looked like milk. Most of them fed it to the pigs. They weren't going to drink that stuff.
That's right. There were a lot of happy Philippine pigs, too.
Yeah, they were drinking sweetened condensed milk, which if they drank milk at all, they'd much prefer that. So we, I guess, worked a little bit with their getting rid of our PL480 food.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's 9 months of doing that kind of stuff. And when George got there, I wanted to be able to obviously move to the village where he was.
Mm-hmm.
He was over in Mung Pieng. And Chet Brown, as I said on the phone, said, if you do, you can't be with IVS any longer. And
I find it very strange.
Even the IVS director in Washington, an older man, and I don't remember his name at all, concurred with the decision. And that was
really?
So stupid, because I was really, even not being a home economist, but I had really set up some interesting programs. I thought was being very productive. It was something I'd always wanted to do since 13. And Chet Brown is saying, no, if you move, you're out of IVS. You have to make a decision.
Well, so many people were transferred from one place to another.
Yes, but I was going to be working, I was going to be living with and working for my boss. See, George would have been my boss.
Because
he was AID, and Chet Brown did not want to start any kind of precedence where an AID person would be in charge of an IVS spouse. It would compromise the whatever. And so,
yeah, right, whatever.
Because I, you know, decided to get married, that was the end of my IVS career.
So it wasn't simply the marriage per se. It was the work relationship. I was really having trouble figuring that out.
Yeah, it was a work relationship because he would then be my boss. And and Chet said, well, you can stay in Vang Vien if you get married, but that's not quite the idea of marriage, if
right.
I remember right. Should you be locked into a marriage? No! So, anyhow, I had a break contract.
Yeah.
And went over to Mung Pieng,
mm-hmm.
and there were IVSers over there who were doing the job, like Joanne Augsburger was the home economist, And Dick Oxford was the agriculturalist. So there are four Americans in that town. And what I ended up doing was volunteering the rest of my life, developing different kinds of programs.
But now outside of IBS.
Absolutely outside of IBS and just helping George.
Yeah, so it just, as soon as you departed from your assignment,
mm-hmm.
where you should have been, that was
yeah,
enough.
That was enough. And that was too bad because you was something I really wanted to do and I
mm-hmm.
thought I was being very successful at it. And so the rest of the time, I helped him develop a variety of programs. One was an information program.
Mm-hmm.
I developed a small library which turned into a lending library. I can still remember some of the stuff that we did. We had a little library in the EID compound, and we took the books to the villages, and
mm-hmm.
we had little flip charts of why you should learn to read, and we put up bulletin boards all through all the different villages,
mm-hmm.
and I took the pictures and had the pictures produced, and we made these bulletin boards showing the villagers what community development things other villagers were doing. So
yeah.
It was an information exchange. It was like a newspaper for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a visual, especially for those who didn't read.
Yeah.
is, you know, in Village A, this is what Village B is doing, is to get their excitement up to maybe mimic.
Yeah.
Increasing people's awareness.
Yeah.
Then we also did a village newspaper, and I taught the Lao how to write a newspaper with my biology background being
yeah.
All made terrific sense. So we wrote.
Well, it's amazing what you really can do when you're.
Oh yeah.
In your place.
And so we wrote a village newspaper, and it was distributed all around that area. Again, like any newspaper, increased people's awareness of
mm-hmm.
what's happening. There's humor in it. So we had it was all a part of literacy.
And a part of extension, too.
Yeah. And so I would help them do that, and then they translate it to English, and I would type up the English version and send
mm-hmm.
it to other regional coordinators or whatever the heck they were called, so they would know, USAID people would know in other communities what we were doing so they could mimic it. And other
if they, yeah.
if they wanted to, and
yeah.
other people did. So it was quite successful. So I did a lot of that and secretarial work for George. There, he had no secretary, so I did a lot of his backup work.
Mm-hmm.
A little disgruntled because I wanted to be, you know, employed. Even though you only got $2,000 a year, it's part recognition of
yeah.
being part of a system and part of a network, and then you're part of the group, you're part of the gang. Once you're outside that gang, you're not part of it anymore. So then we moved.
Especially
to
under those terrible circumstances.
Of being a woman.
Of defying the rules by getting married naturally.
Oh, yeah.
You know, leaving an assignment under
so
a cloud.
So then we moved to Syaboree, where he was. I wish I remembered some of the terms. So in Syaboree, he was in charge of the whole province, which is equivalent to the state. When we were in Mung Ping, he was only in charge of development in Mung Ping. So he raised
mm-hmm.
up to the next level, area coordinator, that's what it's called.
Okay.
He became an area coordinator. He was liaison with the governor. So it'd be like somebody working with Pataki.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked with the governor. Yeah. He worked with the governor rather than the local, quote, mayor. When
mm-hmm.
he was in Mung Ping, he was working with the equivalent of a mayor, I guess,
yeah.
for development activities. And they did nutrition, they did farming, they did home economics, schools, built dispensaries. There was a huge irrigation project in the area at the time. So he was in charge of coordinating all those things. When we went to the capital, he was in charge of stuff in Syaboree and in Mung Ping. So he's, you know, at a higher level directing the stuff down in Mung Ping, working with the governor. And by that time, I was so far removed from the action, there was virtually nothing I could do because he had a staff there in Mung Ping.
Uh-huh.
Mung Ping, he didn't have a staff, so I could provide support.
Mm-hmm.
Up in Syaboree, not a thing in the world unless I wanted to teach English.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to, really. That wasn't my idea of fun. So it was...
You couldn't start up your own projects?
No.
Really? No.
It was too big to do the types of... You know, in Wunpeng there were Lao that I could work with. Actually,
mm-hmm.
they're former monks. And there was it was an easy infrastructure. I could work with them. They were somehow hired by AID, and they needed my help. In Siberi, they're already at a different level of training, and it was mostly administrative. See, out in the villages, you could do something.
Right.
There were people there who needed direction, and I could help direct them. At the, quote, state level, most of the people were just administrative assistants doing paperwork.
Yeah.
And it wasn't...
You can't fit them on that.
I couldn't fit anything on that, so...
No.
That's
systemically, you're just out now.
Yeah. So that was very... it was disappointing. I mean, very, very disappointing being, you know, wife.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just wife, when I had wanted to go over... This was a profession I wanted to do.
Yeah, at least you had the 9 months with IBS, and how long were you in
Wunpeng?
Yeah,
for the rest
in Wunpeng.
The rest of a 2-year cycle. So I was there doing things for 2.5 years.
Okay.
I was there not doing things for 2.5 years.
Yeah, and it was the not doing things that were particularly bad.
Mm-hmm.
Although the doing things in Wunpeng. Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I couldn't believe, the only, you know, I was trying, as I was driving up here, I had a 2.5 hour drive from Cooperstown, and I was trying to figure out, why the heck would he do something like that? And nothing really made sense, unless it was a personal thing, and he didn't like you, and he saw a way to zap you, or if he was just wacko, or if, you know.
Well, I said he's a Midwest farmer, and I'm not a shrinking violet.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's probably a little bit of, you know, power trip. This was one way to absolutely show his power over me. And it was just such a, to me, in Midwest mentality, that's not to put down all Midwest people, but...
Do you think he was... Was there anything in the IVS-AID relationship that other AID officials, even if they had been as urbane as possible, might have still been been wary of? Was there anything to his rationale? Because his rationale basically was, we can't have the spouse of an AID official in our organization because it breaks the chain of command.
Because...
Was there any tension between the AID and IVS that would be even a vaguely legitimate concern?
I don't think so. They they were completely...
Sorry to ask the question
that's
that
right.
way, but that, you know, as an outsider, I have to ask what are sometimes stupid questions.
They were... I mean, there might have been something behind the scenes I wasn't aware of, but
mm-hmm.
they depended on AID.
Yeah.
And maybe they didn't like the fact they depended, but they were in the same compound in Bianchen. There's this compound just outside the city, IVS had an office here. All the AID offices were all around. You had a person in charge. The only people not there, of course, were the, what do you call it? AID was separate from...
USIS?
USIS was outside, and so was the diplomatic service.
Oh, okay.
You lose words as you get older.
The Foreign Service?
The Foreign Service, the diplomatic service was outside of the AID compound.
Yeah.
The AID was all by itself.
Right.
But IVS was right in the middle of the AID compound.
Yeah.
We got all of our, you know, there's a dispensary, not a dispensary, there was, the dispensary was there, and also food and other things. And we often depended on that food because
yeah.
the villages didn't have all that much. And so, you know, we rode on U.S. planes.
Yeah.
The AID paid for planes. So maybe there was some resentment, but I think it was just Chet Brown.
Okay. Well, it's just I was...
being ridiculous, and nobody would support me at the time.
Yeah.
The assistant chief of party, Marty Quish, was very supportive, but he couldn't convince Chet. In fact, Marty and Irene and George and I got married in double ceremony. And he was killed within a year in an airline. He was shot down. So he was very supportive of my staying in IVS,
mm-hmm.
but Chet was dogmatic.
Yeah, I was just saying that in Cooperstown, the fellow that I was seeing there last night, do you have to take care of anything?
No, the glass broke.
Yeah, okay, all right. When he was in Vientiane, the debate that was going on then was, should IVS folks use all of the American goodies, the commissary, the APO mail system, et cetera, et cetera.
When was he there?
What was his year? It was earlier than yourself. I think. No, it was later. I'm sorry. John Dunlap was there 70-72.
Oh, that was a different era. That's when we were starting to pull out. I think
yeah.
the last Americans, it probably went through different iterations, but...
Yeah, and he was saying, though, that he figured out later, he was very new in country when this was all going on. He couldn't figure it out at first. That the administration, the chief of party then was a guy named, I believe, Jim Malia.
Remember the name.
Who was adamant about making a distinction. And Dunlop said that a lot of, he at least, and some others thought that was kind of silly. Because it's there anyway. We just occasionally go get a cheeseburger and the APO system, we're sure that our mail will get there.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that out for the people who were further away, still in forward areas, or at least in danger zones, the identification of AID and IVS seemed to make their lives in greater danger. Because Malia had lost two volunteers to ambushes, you know, within 6 months before John got there. And so he was thinking, well, maybe he wanted to make the distinction so that, you know.
Yeah, but you couldn't have in the Lao mine. They would just think it was silly. Two American organizations in the same country not working together.
And they're in the same compound.
In the same compound and or the same village.
Mm-hmm.
And Group A is independent of Group B. It was set up. It was like a parent-child situation.
Mm-hmm.
USAID was the parent. IVS was a child. Didn't want to be the child, but had this economic umbilical cord.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted to be independent, couldn't be independent. So they're stuck. They had this need. And, you know, all of our supplies for IVS came to AID.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Peace Corps, their budgets were very small. You want to make a toilet, you sit and dig it yourself. Or a well, you had to dig it yourself. Over there, we have the USAID
thriller. Help us through.
Oh, really?
Or, you know, you had backup.
Oh, nice.
You know, there you could do much more as an IVSer because you were affiliated with AID. You were an AID helper. You could do your own programs, but always went through AID. Whereas my understanding of Peace Corps, you were out there, you were with the villagers, and you had to make do with whatever you had, and you didn't get a lot of economic support from the U.S. government.
Only the local agency that you were affiliated with.
Yes, so there's a huge difference.
Yeah.
So where you're doing these big projects, like if you're doing something with rice farming, you're getting funding from AID. You're getting the rice from AID, you're getting the fertilizer from AID, you're getting all the stuff. So obviously you're tightly integrated. So the Lao look at it is you're one unto each other. Either one is fair game for potshots. And they knew us from the military, sort of, but they still didn't understand why we had two different groups over there and why, you know, they figured we were all military.
Really?
I think there's a feeling that we're affiliated with CIA.
Did anyone ever ask you if you were, you know, as you make a Lao friend, they say, are you really?
Well, as I said, this Chao Kuang, who was the governor, used to ask George, now which government is doing this?
Okay. And that's what he was getting at. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be talking about peacetime activities.
Yeah.
And helping honest-to-goodness development activities. And we were doing honest-to-goodness.
Uh-huh.
Then you look up in the air and there's these planes going over, you know, fueling in the air. Oh, where are they going?
They're going on a bombing run.
Yeah, and they say, which government is that? That's why I said, you know, many of us now say we are probably pawns and a good cover-up for what we're trying to keep, I think.
At least a good PR phase.
Yeah, we're doing stability. Oh, I remember the quote was, we're there to capture the hearts and minds of the people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Then somebody said, well, when the communists come along and have them by the balls, their hearts and minds go along with it.
You know? Exactly.
So, I can remember that quote. It was just so poignant. You know, you would say, well, we're working for the hearts and minds of the people. Yes, but. So, I always felt safe in Vang Dieng. I think it was complete naivete. As I said, the military was coming in and out, and I rode on the military planes. But
how far was that from Vientiane?
Vang Dieng was about a 45-minute drive on dusty roads in dry season.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little longer. On Laterite, they just finished the road, and I remember going down through the jungle.
And which direction from then?
Vang Dieng is north of Vientiane.
Okay, so going towards Luang Prabang.
Right.
Okay.
And he's Vientiane, Vang Dieng, and he's Sai Bari, and his Meng Qing is right near the Thai border. It started getting very insecure our second tour over there.
Really?
Yeah. With a Phat Lao were in the area.
Mm-hmm.
We used to drive from Sai Bari to Meng Qing. When we were in Meng Qing, we'd go up to Sai Bari for, you know, Christmas with OB, Operation Brotherhood, the Filipinos.
Mm-hmm.
They always had big spreads and they always had lots of parties. So we'd go up and drive through the jungle at night.
Ooh.
When I think back. In jeeps, drove through the jungle at night to go to these parties and then drove back at night. Well, that was when we were in Meng Qing. The second tour, we were in Sai Bari. You didn't do that anymore. There were ambushes.
This time you stayed in Sai Bari.
When we stayed in Sai Bari, we'd go down to Meng Qing, but only during the day.
Mm-hmm.
There became more and more ambush incidents of, you know, the trucks, quote, taxis that went back and forth. A couple were ambushed. People were killed.
Were these random, or?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. We started getting very scared.
Yeah.
Because of...
What year would that have been?
It's after my daughter was born in 68. And of course, having a child there up the ante of fear.
Yeah.
Because suddenly you aren't just doing your own thing, and you couldn't just run in the woods if something happened. I had this infant. And so when you heard more and more rumors of danger,
mm-hmm.
I'd lie awake nights. I can still remember. We had a earth block house in Cyberie, and we boarded up the windows. You didn't open the windows, so you had cement blocks in the windows. And you just heard rumors of Petite Lao being in the area, and I'd lie awake nights, hearing sounds outside, but it was probably water buffalo, but you hear munch or crunch or crunch, you know. You didn't know if it was people walking through there or what. And of course, the electricity goes off at night. The
mm-hmm.
generators were only on during the day. Electricity went off at night.
Oh.
And so you're thinking to yourself, how the hell would I ever get out of here if I had to? And a newborn child lying there, not a chance in hell
mm-hmm.
of getting out. So it became very scary. And when Cheryl was about 10 months old, I went down to Vientiane, and we finished up the last 6 months down there. And George was on special assignment. I was just petrified.
Yeah.
Because the security was diminishing.
Even in Vientiane?
No, this
yeah.
was in Cyberie.
Where he still was,
yeah,
while
was,
you were in
right.
the capital. Okay.
I went down there a little ahead of time, then he came down. Actually, I don't remember. I remember we had a house down there. I remember being alone a lot.
Yeah.
I think he was probably going back and forth.
Uh-huh.
But it was getting much more insecure. So it was too bad, but then, of course, it started getting more insecure around the country. And by 72, people I knew were pulled out of their houses by helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Bushlers. I think they left, lost everything they had, and left off the roof of their home.
Wow.
And this happened to several people.
Because they were, it was either that or they'd be overrun in minutes or something like that.
Must have been. You know, I don't have all the details.
Right, now.
I came
yeah.
back in 1970. We got back in June 1970, so between then and 72,
mm-hmm.
the security of the country just went down and down and down. And when it hit Vientiane, I mean, they've taken over everything from what
yeah.
I gather. The aid compound is theirs now. And so, this is a very poignant 5 years. In retrospect, it went quickly, but when I was there, that last 2.5 years was forever. You know, just when you're not busy. And
yeah, you're not doing anything, and of course, then you
yeah.
do have the child, and that does increase the activities, but still,
yeah.
it's, you're, then you're also fearing every minute.
Yeah, she got sick a lot.
Yeah.
Get ill, every possible disease, and then you'd have to take her, there's no doctors there, you'd
mm-hmm.
have to take her on a plane to the city.
Mm-hmm.
Planes were not pressurized.
Oh,
she
wow.
always had ear infections.
Kids always have ear infections.
So they're screaming all the way up and screaming all the way down. And you'd lose your sense of humor.
Yeah, real easy.
Yeah, somebody, you're just vulnerable. Here, when I hear people complaining about how long it takes them to get to a doctor, how about days? How about nobody in sight?
Yeah. Can't pick up the phone.
Can't pick up the phone. So, then we've been back here. I've been teaching for 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I came back and got a master's degree in education
mm-hmm.
and started teaching.
How much is still rubbed off on you?
From Laos?
Yeah.
Probably a lot. 15 years ago, this Laotian family came to live with a colleague of mine at the high school who teaches math.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time she said, can you know, they're just off the boat. They just come from a refugee camp. Can you speak any Lao anymore?
Yeah.
And this has been, well, I've been back 15 or whatever, 15, 17 years, and I could. And I could still speak it, and I related to them. I just didn't have the time with all the other things in my life to keep up with them, so mm-hmm. I haven't seen them in a long time. And she suggested I go to this, you know, graduation picnic this afternoon, and they're very happy I'm going to go. And
yeah, yeah.
There's still a lot there. Mm-hmm. You know, I still cook Lao food.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll still have, the house is full of Lao stuff. All the furniture I brought back from Laos.
I was noticing a few things.
Yeah, I designed that, and it was built in Vientiane.
You mean like
all the
same?
It's teak.
Oh, okay.
All the teak furniture I designed, and we mm-hmm. had it made in that last 6 months. Had it made in a little factory in Vientiane. How could I get away from Laos? My house is full of it. You know, the artifacts are all from Laos or Vietnam,
yeah, well,
or Thailand.
I was noticing the artifacts, not so much the
yeah.
furniture.
I mean, all of that comes from there. How could I ever get away from
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
So it's around me constantly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I, you know, cook Lao or Thai food or Chinese food.
Yeah.
And it had a big effect.
And now your daughter wants to go back?
And some of her favorite food is Thai or Chinese.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She's in San Francisco, very Asian.
Oh,
area.
Yeah.
Went out on her birthday. We always, well, she was born on December 28th in Bangkok, so
mm-hmm.
we had Thai food. You know, it's just the very strong underpinning. She had a Thai citizenship until she turned 18, and of course she chose.
Oh, then she had to opt. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you either opt one way or another.
Yeah.
She had an American passport. Didn't seem very reasonable to have a Thai passport at that time.
No, not really.
So, yeah, she'd love to go back. She feels a strong bonding with that, even though she's never been there. But when, I mean, you were born there and grew up for
sure.
2 years.
Yeah.
You know, there's this strong attachment.
Although this is not quite, you know, in the normal interview stuff. What does she do in San Francisco?
Well, right now she's out of work.
Too bad.
She graduated from Cornell.
Uh-huh.
And wanted to get as far away from home as possible.
Okay, you're like mother, like daughter, huh?
she said, San Francisco's my Laos.
Okay.
Well, it's a lot safer.
Yeah.
But it's the same idea of going off and doing her own
yeah.
thing. And she went out completely blind and
mm-hmm.
has done everything from waitressing to running a condom store to working for a company that did some exhibits for the Olympics. I mean, she's...
That's quite a range.
She ran this store called Condomania in the Castro district of... San Francisco, so she grew up tremendously that year.
Oh,
and she
gosh.
Took me around the store. I didn't even want to see half the exhibits or all the explanations.
Yeah, especially the explanations.
Oh, save me. Please save me.
Oh, hi.
So, she's, again, looking for work.
Yeah. Well, with that kind of resume, I'm sure she'll have all sorts of opportunities.
That's pretty exciting.
Okay. Let me see if I've, what I've, yeah, and some have continued with international work,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's AID or whatever, and
yeah.
It becomes like a center. I'm just going to, I forget, I think it's Chamberlain. Maybe not.
Are you going to see Jim?
I forget.
Not sure where he is. I think he's on a second marriage, maybe. Or?
Yeah, I forget. I forget who it. Yeah, I shouldn't guess that. That's who it is. Anyway, about Washington being the center.
Mm-hmm.
He'll just be leaving on another assignment overseas, but
oh, yeah?
Just before I get there,
mm-hmm.
you know. And,
so yes, so
and other people are, you know, just coming in, and so the address list is always in a state of flux for at least the D.C. area, although little bit more stable for the rest of the country. So let's see. I had something in my head and wanted to ask, and now forgot what it was. Do you think that Laos might have, Laos IVS might have learned anything from your own, I'll say, dismissal?
I don't think it was even considered. Mm-hmm. I mean, once Chet Brown made the decision, I don't know of anybody who thought about it.
Really?
First, once I was out of the loop, I don't know if... Mm-hmm. You know, afterwards, they let people have babies. They became much more permissive and
mm-hmm.
certain liaisons, but I don't know if they ever had an IVS AID.
Yeah,
liaison.
As the stickler. No, I didn't realize that that might have been power, part of the power thing.
I think it was, yeah,
and whether it was
Brown power,
mm-hmm.
but why the director in Washington went along with it, I have no idea, except to support Chet.
Yeah, yeah. Maintaining the integrity of the hierarchy or whatever.
So it's too bad.
Mm-hmm. Because I mentioned that there was one fellow who had been let go of early as well. But not even under any pretext. Mm. Just the chief of party thought that he just wasn't fitting in well.
Mm.
And that was enough.
Mm.
No further definition.
Hmm.
No further explanation. So that's it's really very strange. I couldn't quite figure that out. What are the experience, other than what we've gone through, that you might want to mention? Because you've seen, you know, our form, and you typed out your separate thing.
Because I don't have a typewriter. I only have a computer.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So so you didn't type the form. You computed separately, right?
No typewriters anymore.
That's right.
I don't remember the form, but. I mean, I think I gained a tremendous amount and has had a huge impact. I'm sorry that there was a negative part of it, because I think it would have been much more positive.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I would have been overseas for a long time. So somewhat of it's fate, you know, when you're disgruntled, there's a little bit of anger. And so we ended up back here. Then, I don't know, I think it could have contributed to a divorce.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's part of it?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I think, you know, there might have been some underpinnings like, why didn't you try to support me type of thing? You know, it's a little vague to even begin to fathom, but there could have been some little insidious
stuff
from that
era. You never know.
But, you know, it allowed tremendous worldliness.
Mm-hmm.
Travel, saw a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, wouldn't take that 5 years away for anything now.
No.
Right now, 5 years is a puddle.
The ocean has become something much smaller.
Older! That's a little teeny puddle, but, you know, at the time it seemed tremendous.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
well, yeah.
Between 22 and 27, it's like,
whew. No, that is a long time. In that context,
now,
and it's formative, in a sense.
Yeah.
So it's even greater than what later periods are.
5 years now is... No.
Yeah. Yeah, so, unless you were doing a complete change of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it was important. I think they did make some mistakes, but I think every organization does. Looking at education now, many more mistakes in education. It's fraught with incompetence.
Mm-hmm.
So this... youngish organization probably had its incompetence, too.
Well, I did notice one thing. Well, first of all, thank you for...
You're welcome.
...for chatting with me. And I also have... we have release forms that we are asking people to sign for all those copyright purposes. But I have noticed... turn this off to, a gradual